taking a sip. Elsa smiled. It's just coffee. Tony reached for his fiddle and began to play. Aunt jumped up and said,
Dance with me, Lolo.
Laredo rolled her eyes, so put out, and then leapt to her feet and started doing a crazy version of the Charleston that was completely out of step with the music. Everyone laughed. Elsa couldn't remember the last time this house had filled with her children's laughter. It was a gift from God, just like the good weather. Things would be better now. She could feel it. A new year, a new spring. They would have sun, but not too much, and rain, but not too little, and those tender green plants would grow tall. Golden wheat stalks would rise and stretch toward the sun.
Dance with me, Rose said, appearing in front of Elsa, who laughed.
I haven't danced in forever.
None of us has.
Rose placed her left hand on the small of Elsa's back and grasped her right hand, pulled her close.
It was a long winter, Rose said.
Not as long as the summer. Rose smiled.
See, you're right about that.
Beside them, Aunt and Laredo spun and danced and laughed. Elsa was surprised by how comfortable she felt dancing with her mother-in-law, almost light on her feet. She'd always felt so clumsy in Rafe's arms. Now she moved easily, let her hips sway in time to the music.
You are thinking about my son. I see your sadness.
Yes.
If he comes back, I will hit him with a shovel, Rose said. He is too stupid to be my son, and too cruel.
Do you hear that?
Aunt said. Tony stopped playing. Elsa heard the plunk, plunk, plunk of rain hitting the roof. Aunt ran for the front door and swung it open. They all ran out to the porch. A charcoal gray cloud hovered overhead. Another muscled its way across the sky. Raindrops fell lightly, pattering the house, leaving starburst blotches on the dry ground. Rain. Big, fat droplets splattered the steps, gritty with dirt. More drops fell. The patter became a roar, a downpour. They ran into the yard, all of them together, and turned their faces to the cool, sweet rain. It doused them, drenched them, turned the ground to mud at their feet.
We're saved, Rosalba,
Tony said. Elsa pulled her children into her arms and held them tightly, water running down their faces, sliding down their backs in cool, cold streaks.
We're saved.
That night, they splurged on the evening meal, ate homemade fettuccine with bits of browned pancetta in a rich and creamy sauce. Afterward, while Tony played his fiddle in the sitting room amid the percussive beat of the rain, Elsa carried the ricotta cassata out to the family. The cake's golden top, covered with shiny preserved peaches, held a single burning candle. Rose reached into the velvet pouch at her neck and pulled out the American penny that she'd worn for more than 3 decades. Elsa knew every word of the story of this penny, the family lore. Tony had found it in the street in Sicily and picked it up and showed it to Rose. A sign, they'd agreed, the hope for their future. It was the family talisman. This penny had made the rounds every New Year's morning as each member of the family held it for a moment and said aloud what their hope for the new year was. They passed it around when they planted crops and on birthdays. On the back of it, curled on either side, were beautiful embossed shafts of wheat. It was little wonder Tony believed it had shown the Martinellis their destiny. Rose handed the penny to Laredo, who stared solemnly down at it.
Make a wish, Cara.
I don't believe in it anymore, Laredo said, handing the coin back to her grandmother. It didn't keep our family together.
Rose looked stricken. It was a moment before she recovered and managed to smile. Tony's music stopped. Laredo stared at Elsa, teary-eyed.
He promised to teach me to drive when I turned 13.
Ah,
Elsa said, feeling her daughter's pain.
I will teach you.
It's not the same,
Loretta said. There was a short, sharp beat of awkward silence. Then Rose said,
You will believe again. And even if you do not, the coin has its power.
I'll take her wish, Aunt said. Give me the penny.
Even Loretta laughed and dashed the tears from her eyes. Tony played Happy Birthday on his fiddle, and everyone sang. In the days after the beautiful rainstorm, Elsa woke early each morning, fueled by hope, and went outside. She inhaled deeply, smelled the fecund scent of wet land, and knelt in the garden to tend her vegetables. She encouraged them to grow as she did her children, with a careful hand and a quiet voice. The ground looked alive again, not parched and dry. Here and there, fragile green tips poked up from the dirt, seeking sunshine. This morning, she saw Tony standing at the edge of the winter wheat field, not bothering with a sun hat. It was warm and kind, this sun, like an old friend. She walked past the chicken coop, heard them clucking. Their old rooster strutted along the wire fence, trying to hurry her past his brood. The windmill thunked in the breeze, bringing up water. Elsa came to the edge of the field and stopped.
Look at it,
Tony said in a rough voice. Green. Rows of new growth, stretching to the horizon in straight rows. Here was the essence of hope on a farm, the color of the future. Green now and delicate, but with sunshine and rain, the wheat would become as sturdy as the family, as strong as the land itself, and turn into a sea of waving gold that would sustain them all. At the very least, there would be grain for the animals. After 4 years of drought, that alone would be a blessing. Elsa left Tony standing at the altar of his land and headed toward the house. She knelt at her special patch of ground beneath the kitchen window. Her aster was green.
Hey, you, she said. I knew you'd come back.
14. On the day it happened, Elsa told herself it was nothing. They all did. She woke early, feeling restless. She'd slept badly and didn't know why. She got out of bed and splashed water on her face and realized suddenly what was wrong. She was hot. She braided her hair and covered it with a kerchief and went out into the kitchen, where she found Rose standing at the window. Elsa knew they were both thinking the same thing. It was already hot, and it wasn't even 7 o'clock in the morning.
What's one hot day?
Elsa said, coming to stand by her mother-in-law.
I used to love hot days,
Rose said. Elsa nodded. They stared out at the blinding yellow sun. 8 straight days of 100-degree heat, in mid-March. They renewed their efforts to conserve energy, water, food, kerosene. They darkened the windows and carried water by the bucketful, poured it sparingly on the garden and on the grapes and in the animal troughs, but it wasn't enough. The new growth began to wilt in the inexorable heat. By the 4th day, the wheat was dead, not a hint of green for hundreds of acres. Elsa watched her father-in-law's steady decline in spirit. He still woke early and drank a cup of bitter black coffee and read the newspaper. It wasn't until he opened the door that his shoulders slumped. Each day, he was destroyed anew at the sight of his land. Some days, he spent hours at the edges of his dead wheat field, just staring out. He would come home, smelling of sweat and despair, and sit in the sitting room, saying nothing. Rose tried everything she could to revive his spirit, but none of them had much optimism left. Still, even as the crops died and the fields dried up and their skin burned, life went on. Today, Elsa and Rose had to do laundry in this blinding, headache-inducing heat. Elsa wanted to simply let her children wear dirty clothes and say, "Who cares? Everyone was dirty these days."
But what would that say about the kind of mother she was, or the lessons she was teaching them? What if one of the few remaining neighbors stopped by and saw her children in unwashed clothes? So she washed out the tubs and filled them with water and spent more sweaty, exhausting hours washing towels and bedding and clothes. First, of course, every item had to be carried outside and shaken. The cistern had gone dry in this unseasonable heat, so all the water she needed had to be hauled up from the well and carried into the house in buckets. Thankfully, Laredo was good at hauling water, and lately she was too tired and dispirited to complain. By the time Elsa finished the laundry, it was well past noon and over 105 degrees. The sheets were pinned onto the lines and flapping in the breeze. She could barely lift her head, and every joint in her body ached. And all of it was a waste, because dust would rise or fall or puff up from nowhere and leave a film on everything she'd just washed. She returned to the dark, stuffy kitchen and started bread by mixing together last night's leftover potato water, a boiled potato, sugar, yeast, and flour. At 2 o'clock, Laredo walked into the kitchen.
"Good," Elsa said, covering the bread mixture with a dish towel. "You're just in time to help me bring in the laundry."
"Joy,"
Laredo said, following Elsa outside. On the first day of spring, yet another sweltering day, Mom decided it was time to make soap. Soap. Laredo was too tired to complain, and it wouldn't do any good anyway. Mom and Grandma were warrior women. Nothing stopped them when they'd made up their minds. Laredo followed her mother out to the barn. Working together, they rolled a big black cauldron across the hard dirt yard and set it up. Mom knelt beside the three-legged pot and built a fire. As flames took hold and licked upward, Mom said, "Start hauling water." Laredo said nothing, just grabbed a pair of buckets and headed off. When she got back, Grandma was with Mom, watching the fire.
"We should have laid pipe," Grandma said. "Back when times were good."
"You know what they say about hindsight," was Mom's reply.
"Instead, we bought more land, a new truck, and a thresher. No wonder God is smiting us, fools," Grandma said.
"Keep John," Laredo said. "I can handle all the water myself."
Grandma smacked her lightly in the back of the head.
"Basta, go."
By the time the cauldron had enough water in it, Loretta's neck ached, her knees hurt, and the dang heat was giving her a headache. She tugged the bandana at her throat free and used it to blot her cheeks. When the water began to boil, Grandma scraped lard into the pot and then carefully poured in the lye. The hot, humid air instantly turned toxic. Mom coughed and covered her mouth and nose. The heat headache intensified behind Loretta's eyes. The blue of the horizon became hard to look at without blinking. She stared instead at the field of dead potatoes. The empty windmill platform made her miss her daddy, an emotion she clamped down quickly. She was done missing her dad. Good riddance, she thought, or tried to. Mom stood at the pot, stirring the mixture of lye, grease, and water with a long pointed stick until it was the right consistency. Making soap to sell. As if soap would save them. As if it would make them enough money to feed them all this winter. Mom ladled the soap into wooden molds while Grandma kicked sand on the fire to extinguish it.
"Loretta, help me carry these trays to the root cellar," Mom said.
Grandma wiped her hands on her apron and headed back to the house. Loretta knew that as soon as the cauldron was cool, they'd have to roll it back to the barn, and the thought of it made her want to scream in frustration. Instead, she grabbed a tray full of unset soap and followed her mother down into the dark, relative cool of the root cellar. Empty shelves. After years without a wheat harvest or much of a garden, they'd been living on the bounty of better years, but those supplies were going fast. She and Mom exchanged a look, but neither of them spoke. There was no comfort in pointing out their lack of food supplies. Loretta followed Mom back out into the heat. She was about to ask for a glass of water when she heard a strange sound. She stopped, listened.
"Do you hear that?"
It was coming from the barn. Mom headed toward the barn, opening the barn door in a giant sweep of creaking wood. Loretta followed her inside. Milo lay on his side, his sunken belly wheezing up and down as he tried to breathe. Dirty mucus slid from his nostrils, pooling on the ground. Grandpa knelt beside the horse, stroking his damp neck.
"What's wrong with him?" Loretta asked.
"He collapsed," Grandpa said. "I was leading him out of his stall to water."
"Go to the house, Loretta," Mom said. She walked over to Grandpa, dragging a milking stool toward him, and sat down. She placed a hand on his shoulder.
"I got to shoot him, Elsa. He's suffering. The poor boy gave us his all."
Loretta stared at Milo, thinking, no. So many of her good memories included Milo. She remembered when Daddy taught her to ride on this old gelding.
"He'll take care of you, Lolo. Trust him. Don't be afraid."
Loretta remembered Daddy swinging her up into the saddle and Mom saying, "Isn't she too little yet?" And Daddy smiling,
"Not my Lolo. She can do anything."
Up on Milo's back, Loretta had conquered fear for the first time.
"I did it, Daddy!"
It had been one of the best days of Loretta's life. She'd gone from a walk to a trot in one day, and Daddy had been so proud. For years afterward, Milo had been her best friend on this vast farm. He followed her around like a puppy, nibbling at her shoulder, bumping her for carrots. And now he'd fallen.
"Don't just sit there. Do something," Loretta said, her eyes burning with tears. "He's suffering."
"I failed at all of it,"
Grandpa said. "You didn't fail," Mom answered. "The land failed you."
"The government man said we did it to ourselves with greed and bad farming. If I'm a bad farmer, I got nothing, Elsa."
Milo shuddered, wheezed, made a low, desperate moan of pain, and kicked out his front legs. Loretta walked dully to the workbench and picked up her grandfather's Colt revolver. She checked the chamber, closed it with a snap, and returned to Milo, who wheezed and snorted at her touch. She saw the pain in his eyes, the muddy mucus in his nostrils as she stroked his damp neck.
"I love you, boy," she said.
Tears blinded her, blurred his beloved face.
"You gave us everything you had. I should have spent more time with you. I'm sorry."
"Loretta, no,"
Grandpa said.
"That ain't..."
Loretta put the muzzle of the pistol to the gelding's head and pulled the trigger. The gunshot cracked loudly. Blood splattered Loretta's face. After that, silence. Tears streaked down Loretta's cheeks. She wiped them away impatiently. Useless tears.
"The government will pay us $16 for him, dead or alive," she said.
$16,
Grandpa said.
"For our Milo."
Loretta knew what the grown-ups were thinking. They'd have $16, but no means of transportation, and no crops, no food.
"How long before we all start falling to our knees and can't get up? How long?"
She threw down the gun and ran out of the barn. She might have headed for the driveway and kept running all the way to California, but before she even reached the house, she felt the wind pick up. She looked out and saw it. Dust storm, barreling down from the north, coming fast. That week, the wind became a clawing, screaming monster that shook the house and rattled the windows and pounded at the doors. Wind blew at over 40 miles an hour, day after day, no reprieve, just an endless, terrifying assault. Dust rained down from the ceiling constantly. All of them breathed it in and spit it out and coughed it up. Birds were disoriented by the dust and slammed into walls and telephone poles. Trains stopped on the tracks. Drifts of sand moved like waves across the flat land. They woke to find outlines of their bodies in dust on the sheets. They put Vaseline in their noses and covered their faces with bandanas. The adults went out into the mall when they had to, following the rope that they'd strung from the house to the barn, going hand over hand, blinded by dust. The chickens were wild with panic and breathing in dirt day after day, and the children stayed in the house wearing gas masks. Ant hated to keep his mask on, said it gave him a headache, even though the dust bothered him more than it did the rest of them. Elsa worried about him, slept with him, sat in bed with him, reading as best she could in her scratchy voice. Stories were the one thing that calmed him down. Now, on this fifth day of the storm, he was in her bed with the covers drawn up, wearing his gas mask, while Elsa swept the floor. Dirt slipped through cracks in the rafters and fell on everything. She heard a thump, nearly lost in the maw of the storm. Ant had dropped his picture book onto the floor. Elsa set the broom aside and went to his bedside.
Ant, baby. Mom.
He coughed violently. He'd never coughed this hard before. She thought it might crack his ribs. Elsa pulled down her bandana and eased the gas mask off of his face. Mud collected in the corners of his eyes, crusted his nostrils. He blinked.
Mom, is that you?
It's me, baby. She pulled him up, poured water into a glass, and made him drink it. She could see how much it hurt him to swallow. His breathing, even without the mask, was a terrible, drawn-out wheezing. Wind clattered at the windows, squealed through the cracks in the wood.
My stomach hurts.
I know, baby. Grit. It was in all of them, in their tears, their nostrils, on their tongues, serrating their throats, collecting in their stomachs until they were all nauseated. Each of them lived with a gnawing stomach ache. But Ant felt the worst. His cough was brutal, and he couldn't eat. Lately, he said the light hurt his eyes.
Drink some more. I'll put some turpentine and hot towels on your chest.
Ant sipped at the water like a baby bird. When he finished, he slumped back, wheezing. Elsa climbed into bed beside her son, taking him into her arms, murmuring prayers. He lay frighteningly still. She took some Vaseline out of a tin and smoothed it in Ant's raw, dirt-clogged nostrils, then refit the gas mask over his face. He blinked up at her, crying. Mud formed in the corners of his red eyes.
Don't cry, baby. The storm will stop soon, and we'll take you to the doctor. He'll make you all better.
He wheezed through the gas mask.
Oh, Kay,
he said. Elsa held him close, hoping he didn't see her tears. 9 days, and still no respite from the storm. Wind rattled the walls and scratched at the door. When Elsa woke to yet another day of wind, she checked on Ant, who slept beside her. He hadn't been strong enough to get out of bed in the last 4 days. He didn't even play with his soldiers anymore and didn't want to be read to. He just lay there wearing his gas mask, wheezing. That terrible, drawn-out breathing was the first thing she listened for each morning when she woke and each night when she drew him close. She heard his breathing and said a quick prayer to the Virgin Mary and got out of bed. Pulling the crusty bandana down to her throat, she stepped down on the fine layer of silt that had collected on the floorboards overnight. Leaving footprints across the room, she went to the nightstand to wash her face. The mirror stopped her, as it so often did these days.
Lord,
she croaked. Her face looked like a mile of desert in the summer, brown, cracked, furrowed. Her lips and teeth were brown with grit. Dust had gathered in the corners of her eyes and on her lashes. She washed and dried her face and brushed her teeth. In the sitting room, she stepped into her boots by the door and paused, staring down at the rattling knob. The walls shook at the force of the wind. She slipped her bandana back up over her nose and mouth, then put on her gloves and used all her strength to open the door. Wind pushed her back. She leaned into it and squinted into the driving dust. Finding the rope they'd strung between the house and the barn, she pulled herself across the yard, hand over hand, making her way slowly. At last, she came to the barn. Once inside, she snapped a lead rope onto Bella's halter and led the poor, stumbling cow out of her stall and into the barn's wide center aisle. The walls clattered and shook. Dust rained down from overhead. Setting the pail in place, Elsa sat down on the milking stool and took off her gloves, tucking them into her apron pocket. Lowering her bandana, she reached for the cow's dry, scabby teat. The barn rattled around them. Wind whistled through the cracks, broke through boards. Elsa's hands were so chapped and raw that it hurt her as much to milk as it did the cow. She took hold. The cow bellowed in pain.
"Sorry, girl," Elsa said. "I know it hurts, but my boy needs milk. He's sick."
Thick brown milk came out in oozing, muddy globs, splattered into the bucket.
"Come on, girl,"
Elsa urged, trying again, and again, and again. Nothing but milky mud. Elsa closed her gritty eyes and rested her forehead on Bella's great sunken side. The cow's tail swished at her, stung her cheek. She didn't know how long she sat there, grieving for the lost milk, wondering how she would feed her children without milk or butter or cheese, grieving for this good animal who was breathing in dirt all day long and wouldn't live long. The other cow had stopped producing milk months ago and was even worse off than Bella. With an exhausted sigh, Elsa put her gloves on and pulled her bandana up and led Bella back into her stall. By the time Elsa made it back to the house, her forehead was scraped raw and she could barely see. This wind grated skin away.
"Elsa, you okay?"
It was Tony. He came up beside her, put a steadying arm around her. She pulled her bandana down to talk.
"No more milk."
Tony's quiet was heartbreaking.
"So, we'll sell the cows to the government. $16 apiece, wasn't it?"
Elsa tried to wipe the grit from her eyes.
"We still got soap to sell, and a few eggs."
"Thank God for small miracles."
"Yeah,"
Elsa said, thinking of the root cellar's empty shelves. 15. Quiet. No wind rattling the windows, no dirt raining down from the ceiling. Elsa opened her eyes in the cautious way they'd all perfected. She pulled down the mud-encrusted bandana that covered her nose and mouth and brushed the dirt from her eyes. It took her a moment to focus. When she sat up, dirt pattered to the floor. She checked on Ant first thing, wakened him by easing the gas mask off his small, bony face.
"Hey, baby boy," she said. "Storm's over."
Ant opened his eyes. Elsa could see the effort it took. There was no white in his eyes at all, just a deep, angry red.
"I can't breathe."
His dirty, blue-veined eyelids fluttered shut. "He's getting worse."
"Aunt, baby, don't go to sleep, okay?"
He tried to wet his lips, kept trying to clear his throat.
"I feel bad, Mommy."
Elsa brushed the damp hair back from her son's forehead, felt how hot he was. Fever. That was new. Elsa had a deep fear of fevers, a remnant from her youth, a reminder of her own illness. Elsa uncovered the pitcher beside the bed and poured water into the crockery basin. Then she dipped a wash rag into the lukewarm water and wrung out the excess and laid the cool, damp cloth across his forehead. Water dripped down the sides of his face. Elsa poured a small bit of water into a glass, helped him to take two aspirin.
"Pretend it's your grandma's lemonade, sweet and tart."
She gave him a teaspoon of sugar laced with turpentine. It was the only remedy they knew to combat the dust he breathed in, even with the mask on. Ant drank a tiny amount and gulped down the sugar, then closed his eyes and sank deeper into the pillow. Elsa had just released a breath when he suddenly arched up, his body seizing, his fingers curling into claws, his red eyes rolling back in his head. Elsa had never felt so helpless in her life. There was nothing she could do. She sat there, watching the seizure rack her little boy. The seconds seemed to last forever. When it ended, she took him in her arms, held him tightly, too shaky and frightened to soothe him.
"Help me, Mommy,"
he said in a cracked voice.
"I'm hot."
He needed help. Now. She didn't care if there was no money. She'd beg if she had to.
"I'll help you, baby."
She scooped him into her arms, blanket and all, and carried him through the house. As if from a distance, she heard the family yell at her. She couldn't stop, didn't care about anything but Aunt. She made it out to the porch before she realized they had no horse, nothing to pull the wagon. The driveway stretched out in front of her, desolate and bare. The ground was hard and flat in places, scoured to hardpan by the wind, which had also torn through barbed wires if it were strands of hair, ripped it away, sent it flying. There were bits of it on every building. Tumbleweeds stuck to it and then were covered in drifts of sand. She saw a wheelbarrow standing upright, half buried in sand. Could she do it? Push him 2 miles to town in a wheelbarrow? Of course. She could take him as far as she needed to. She walked unsteadily toward it and lay him down in the rusted scoop, his spindly legs hanging over the edge. She positioned his head carefully on the blanket.
"Me,"
he wheezed.
"The light hurts."
"Close your eyes, baby," she said. "Go to sleep. We're going to see Doc Reinhardt." Elsa picked up the rough wooden handles and headed for the driveway.
"Elsa!"
She heard Rose yelling for her, but didn't stop, didn't listen. She was in a panic to go, to get him help. She knew it was crazy, knew she was a little unhinged, but what else could she do?
"Elsa, let us help!"
Elsa plunged forward. The wheelbarrow seemed to fight back. She felt every bump in the driveway, every furrow like a blow to her spine. She made it to the main road. Desolation, sand in heaps, sheds covered by it, fences fallen. She turned onto the road and kept going, breathing hard. Heat beat down on her. Sweat blurred her vision, ran between her breasts in itchy streams. She stubbed her toe on something buried in the sand and stumbled. The wheelbarrow was wrenched out of her hands, clattered forward. Aunt hit his head on the ground.
"I'm sorry, baby,"
Elsa said. Even she couldn't hear her words. Her throat was so dry. She looked down at her left palm, skin torn away, bloody. Her blood darkened the handles. She resettled Aunt in the wheelbarrow and fought to move forward. Before she'd taken a full step, she felt a hand on her shoulders. Tony stood there, with Rose and Loretta on either side of him.
"Are you ready to let us help you now? You don't have to do it all yourself," Rose said.
"Yeah, Mom," Loretta said. "We've been yelling for you. Are you deaf?"
Elsa almost burst into tears. Very slowly, she set the wheelbarrow down. Tony took hold of the handles, lifted the wheelbarrow up, and started off. Loretta moved in beside him, took over one side.
"You made it nearly a mile," Rose said,
tenderly smoothing the damp hair from Elsa's dirty forehead.
"I'm just
a mother."
Rose reached down for Elsa's hands, lifted them, looked at the torn, bloody palms. Elsa steeled herself. Her own mother would have scolded her for her stupidity in not wearing gloves. Rose slowly lifted one of Elsa's hands, kissed the bloody skin.
"That used to make it all better for my foolish son."
"It helps," Elsa said. It was the first time in her life someone had kissed an injury of hers to make it better.
"Come. My husband is not as young as he thinks. It will be my turn soon."
Lonesome Tree was a ghost town. Tony pushed the wheelbarrow down Main Street, past the boarded-up storefronts. The once thriving feed store had been taken over by the Red Cross and converted into a hospital. The plains cottonwood was gone. Someone must have cut it up for firewood after it died of thirst. At the makeshift hospital, Tony picked up Aunt, who groaned and coughed. Inside, the narrow building was shadowy and dark. The windows had been boarded up to keep out the dust and wind. Red Cross nurses wore uniforms that had once been starched white and were now a wrinkled gray. A doctor hurried from bed to bed, stopping just long enough at each to make an assessment and bark orders to the nurses following along behind him. Tony carried Aunt into the room.
"I have a child here who needs help."
A nurse approached them. She looked as haggard and drawn as everyone else.
"How bad is he?"
"Bad."
The nurse sighed heavily.
"A bed came open this morning."
They all knew that meant someone had died from the dust. The nurse gave Elsa a sad look.
"It's been bad. Come."
Elsa followed Tony into the room full of wheezing and coughing patients. They settled Aunt on a cot in the back, beneath a 10-foot window covered by wooden boards. Even so, the sill was stuffed with rags. To the left, a cot held an old man who fought for every breath. A mask covered his eyes. Elsa knelt beside her son. Heat radiated off of him. She touched his hot forehead.
"I'm here, Aunt. We all are."
Laredo sat at the end of the cot.
"We're gonna play checkers. I'll let you win."
Aunt coughed harder. Moments later, Rose came back with the doctor. She was holding onto his sleeve in a death grip. No doubt Rose had grabbed the poor man and dragged him over here. Somehow, Rose still had a fire in her. Elsa couldn't imagine how she kept it lit in all this falling dirt. The doctor leaned down to take Aunt's temperature. The doctor read the thermometer, then examined Aunt and sighed.
"Your son is seriously ill, which I'm sure you know. He has a high fever and is suffering from severe silicosis, dust pneumonia. Prairie dust is full of silica. It builds up in the lungs and tears away the air sacs."
"Which means?"
"He's breathing in dirt and swallowing it, filling up with it. There's no other way to put it, but you've done the right thing to bring him here. This is the best place in town to be in a dust storm. We will take good care of him, I promise."
The doctor glanced down at beds full of wheezing, coughing, sweating, dying patients.
"Try not to worry."
"Is he dying?"
Elsa asked quietly.
"Not yet."
The doctor touched her shoulder, gave her a gentle squeeze.
"You need to go home now. Let me help him."
Elsa knelt beside Aunt's cot. She buried her face in the hot crook of his neck, nuzzled him.
"I'm here, baby boy."
Her voice broke.
"I love you."
Rose gently pulled Elsa to her feet. It took all of Elsa's self-discipline not to wail or scream or fall apart. She had no idea how she found the strength to turn around and meet her mother-in-law's sad gaze.
"We have some butter," Rose said in a tight voice. "We could make him a cookie or two. Bring them back tomorrow, along with some toys and his clothes."
"I can't leave him."
The doctor stepped closer.
"Everyone here is either an infant, a child, or an old person. Each one has someone who wants to sit with them. There's no room for visitors. Go home. Sleep. Let us take care of him. For a week at least, maybe two."
"We can visit, can't we?"
Loretta said.
"Of course," the doctor said. "Anytime you want. And there's other kids here for him to play with when he's feeling better."
Elsa said,
"What if..."
The doctor stopped her.
"You're going to ask what they all ask. Here's what I can say. If you want to save him, get him out of Texas. Take him somewhere he can breathe."
Rose put an arm around Elsa. It was the only thing that kept her upright.
"Come, Elsa. Let's go make our boy some treats. We'll bring him by tomorrow."
Elsa stood at the edge of the dead wheat field. Dry brown dirt lay in dunes as far as she could see. It was nearly 4 o'clock now, and still the sun beat down, hot and dry. The windmill turned slowly, creaking, doing its best. She wanted to believe that rain would come back and the seeds would sprout and this land would thrive again, but hope was something she could no longer afford, not when Ant was lying on a cot, coughing up the dirt in his lungs, burning with fever. Dust pneumonia. That was what they called it, but it was really loss and poverty and man's mistakes. She heard footsteps behind her. They came with that new shuffling sand sound, a kind of whisper, as if man were afraid now of disturbing the earth that had turned on him. Tony came to a stop beside her. Rose stepped into place on her other side.
"He's dying here," Elsa said.
Dying. It wasn't just Ant. It was the land, the animals, the plants, everything. The sun had burned everything to dust, and the wind had blown it all away. Millions of tons of topsoil gone.
"We need to leave Texas," Elsa said.
"Yes," Rose said. "We can sell the cows to the government. That'll help some," Tony said. "They'll give us $32 for the two cows."
Elsa drew in a deep, painful breath and stared out at the dead, brown land. She didn't want to go into the unknown with no job and almost no money. None of them wanted to leave. This was home. Above their heads, the windmill creaked and the blades turned slowly. Together, they walked back to the farmhouse, dust rising from their feet. 16.
"I was thinking I could take Loretta hunting tomorrow," Grandpa said at dinner that night. "That's a good idea," Grandma said, dipping her bread in a small bit of their precious olive oil. "The compass is in my dresser. Top drawer."
"We should clean out the barn," Mom said. "Rafe's old hunting tent is in there somewhere, and the wood-burning stove from the dugout."
Loretta couldn't take it another second. The grown-ups were jawing about nothing. They seemed to forget that Aunt was in that dingy hospital without any of them, or they thought she was too young to hear the truth. This stupid conversation was making her sick. The last thing they needed to do was clean out the darn barn. She got to her feet so suddenly, the chair leg screeched. She kicked the chair out of her way, watched it crash to the floor.
"He's dying, isn't he?"
Mom looked up at her.
"No, Loretta, he's not dying."
"You're lying to me, and I'm not doing dishes."
She stormed out of the house and slammed the door shut behind her. Outside, there were no horses in the corral, no hogs in their pen. All they had left were a few bony chickens, too hot and tired and hungry to cluck at her passing, and two cows who were barely still standing. Soon, the cows would be sold to the government men and be taken away. Then all the pens would be empty. She climbed up to the windmill platform and sat beneath the endless, star-splattered Great Plains night sky. Up here, it felt, or it once had, as if she were a part of the heavens. She'd been so many things sitting here, a ballerina, an opera singer, a motion picture star. Dreams her father had encouraged before he left to follow his own. Loretta bent her legs and wrapped her arms around her ankles. She could handle the dying farm and adults who lied to her. She could even handle her father abandoning them, her. But this, Aunt, her baby brother, who curled up like a potato bug and sucked his thumb, who ran like a marionette, all arms and legs akimbo, who looked up at her at night and said, "Tell me a story," and hung on every word. "Aunt," she whispered, realizing it was a prayer, the first one she'd even begun in years. The windmill shook. She looked down and saw her mother ascending, rattling the boards as she climbed up. Mom sat down beside her, let her legs dangle over the edge.
"I'm not a baby, Mom. You can tell me the truth."
Mom took a deep breath and exhaled it.
"We were talking about your dad's tent because we're leaving Texas as soon as Aunt is better. Going to California."
Loretta turned,
What?
I talked it over with Grandma and Grandpa. We have a bit of money, and the truck runs, so we will drive west. Tony is still strong. He'll find work, maybe on the railroad. I could do laundry for people, I hope. I hear Pamela Schreier got work in a jewelry store. Imagine that. Her husband, Gary, is tending grapes.
And Aunt is coming with us?
Of course he is. As soon as he's better, we'll go.
It's 1,000 miles to California. Gas is 19 cents a gallon. Do we have enough for that?
How do you know all of that?
After Dad left, when I was supposed to be studying Texas history, I studied maps of California. I thought about
running away to find him.
Yeah. It turns out I'm stupid, but not that stupid. California is a big state, and I don't even know for sure that he went west, or that he stayed west.
No, we don't know any of that. Loretta leaned against her mother, who put an arm around her. Leaving. Loretta thought about it for the first time, really thought about it, leaving home.
I wanted you to grow up on this land,
Mom said.
I wanted to grow old here and be buried here and watch over your children's children. I wanted to see the wheat grow again.
I know,
Loretta said, with a sting of realization. There was a part of her that wanted that too.
We don't have a choice, Mom said. Not anymore.
A week later, most of the chicken coop was still buried in dirt, as was one whole side of the barn. The cows had been sold and taken away, and the farm had been transformed by the 11-day dust storm into a sea of brown waves. It was too much work to dig out from all that dirt, especially now that they were leaving. The big, wooden slat-sided truck bed had been loaded with a few of the things they thought they'd need in their new life— the small wood-burning stove, barrels of goods and food, boxes of bedding, pots and pans, a gallon of kerosene, lanterns. Elsa walked like a Bedouin up and down the dunes, past the windmill. At last she found some yucca, growing wild, its fibrous roots exposed by the wind and erosion. She hacked up the roots, ripped them out of the ground, and dropped them into a metal bucket. Back at the house, she saw Loretta seated at the kitchen table with Tony, maps laid out around them.
What's that?
Rose said, coming out of the kitchen. She'd canned 2 chickens for the trip. That, along with the last of the canned vegetables, a sugar-cured ham, and some preserved Russian thistles, should get them to California.
Yucca. We can boil it and eat it.
Loretta made a face.
A new low, Mom.
Outside, a car came into view. They looked at each other. When was the last time they'd had visitors? Elsa wiped her hands on a cement sack dish towel and followed Tony out of the house. The automobile rolled up the road, dodging this way and that to avoid cracks in the earth and sand dunes and coils of barbed wire. Yellow-brown dust billowed up from the thin rubber tires. Tony crossed the porch and headed toward the automobile coming their way. Elsa tented a hand to shield her eyes from the glare of the sun.
Who is it?
Rose asked, coming up beside her, wiping her damp hands on her apron. The automobile rumbled up into the yard and stopped in front of Tony. The cloud of dust dissipated slowly, revealing a 1933 Ford Model Y. The door opened slowly. A man stepped out of the car, straightened. He wore a black suit, the buttoned-up coat strained over a well-fed gut, and a brand-new fedora. A thicket of gray sideburns bracketed his florid face. Mr. Gerald, the only banker left in town. Rose and Elsa walked down into the brown yard and stood with Tony.
Morton,
Tony said, frowning.
Are you here about the meeting tomorrow? I hear that government man is coming back to town. Yes, he is, but that's not why I'm here.
Morton Gerald shut the car door gently, as if the automobile were a lover in need of care, and doffed his hat.
Ladies?
He paused, looked uncomfortably at Tony.
Perhaps the ladies would like to give us some time to speak privately, he said.
Rose said firmly,
We'll stay.
How can I help you, Morton?
Tony asked.
Your note for the back 160 acres came due,
Mr. Gerald said. To his credit, he looked unhappy with the news.
I'd roll it over if I could, but, well, as tough as times are for you farmers, there are men in the big cities speculating on land. You owe us nearly $400. Take the thresher,
Tony said.
Hell, take the tractor. Well, no one needs farm equipment these days, Tony. But the rich men back east, the men who own the bank, they figure there's still money in land. If you can't pay, they're going to foreclose.
There was no answer, just the sighing of the wind, as if it, too, were disgusted.
Can you pay something, Tony? Anything, so I can hold him off?
Tony looked whipped, ashamed.
I have more land than I need, Morton. Go ahead, take those acres back, he said.
Mr. Gerald pulled a pink slip of paper out of his shirt pocket.
This is a formal foreclosure on your back 160 acres. Unless you repay your debt in full in the time stated, we will auction off that section of land on April 16th to the highest bidder.
Elsa's shoes sank into the deep sand every now and then, upsetting her balance as she and Tony walked to town. On either side of the road, abandoned farmhouses and automobiles were buried in drifts of dirt. Sometimes all she could see of a shed was the roof's peak sticking up from a dune. Telephone poles had fallen down. Not a bird called out. In town, an otherworldly quiet reigned. No automobiles rumbled up the street, no horses clopped in a steady rhythm. The school bell had been ripped away in the 11-day storm and still hadn't been found. No doubt it was buried and would be revealed when the wind returned and shifted the landscape yet again. At the makeshift hospital, Elsa came to a stop.
I'll meet you in 30 minutes.
Tony nodded. He pulled the patched gray hat down over his eyes and headed toward the schoolhouse for the town meeting, his shoulders already slumped in defeat. No one expected much from the government man's return. When Elsa entered the shadowy hospital, it took her eyes a moment to adjust to the hazy gloom. People hacked and coughed, babies cried, tired nurses moved from bed to bed. Elsa smiled at masked patients as she passed them. Most were either very young or very old. Ant sat up in his narrow cot, pretending swordplay with a fork and a spoon.
Take that, matey,
he said, clanging the fork into the spoon. His voice was still rough, and the gas mask sat in readiness on the small table beside him.
You're no match for the shadow.
Hey there,
Elsa said, sitting down on the edge of his bed. He looked so much better today. For the past 10 days, Aunt had been lethargic and had remained listless even when someone came to visit. Here, though, finally, was her boy. He's back. Elsa's relief was so sudden and staggering she felt tears sting her eyes.
Mommy!
He launched himself at her, hugged her so fiercely she almost fell off the bed. She had difficulty letting him go.
I'm playing pirates,
he said, grinning at her.
You lost a tooth.
I did, and I really lost it. Nurse Sally thinks I swallowed it.
Elsa lifted the basket she'd brought with her. Inside was a bottle of orzata, the sweet, syrupy drink they made each year from almonds purchased at the general store. This was the last precious bottle they had, made years ago, and hoarded for special occasions. Elsa added a splash of it to a bottle she'd filled with canned milk and shook it to make bubbles, then handed it to Aunt.
Jeepers,
he said, savoring his first sip. She knew he would try to drink it slowly and make it last, but he wouldn't be able to.
And this,
Elsa said, producing a single sugar cookie glazed with sweet icing. Ant nibbled the cookie like a mouse, starting around the edges, working his way into the chewy center.
"It looks like one lucky little boy has a mom who loves him," said the doctor, stopping by the bed.
Elsa stood. "He looks better today, doctor."
"He must be improving. The nurses tell me he's becoming a handful," Dr. Reinhardt said, ruffling Ant's hair. "His fever finally broke last night, and his breathing is much improved. He is absolutely on the mend. I want to keep an eye on him for a few days, but that's just to be safe."
Elsa offered the doctor a cookie.
"It's not much, I know."
The doctor took the cookie and smiled, taking a bite.
"So, Aunt, would you like to go home soon?"
"Boy, would I, Doc. My toy soldiers miss me."
"How about Tuesday?"
"Yippee,"
Aunt said. A little cough accompanied his enthusiastic cry. Elsa's heart clutched at the sound. Would she feel a rush of fear at every cough from now on?
"Thank you, doctor," she said.
He gave her a tired smile.
"See you Tuesday."
Elsa sat back down beside her son. His favorite book lay waiting for them, The Tale of Little Pig Robinson by Beatrix Potter. He could listen over and over to the story of Little Pig's escape on a rowboat to the land where the bong tree grows, loving it anew each time. Or maybe it was the familiarity he loved, the idea that every time it ended in the same way. He snuggled into the crook of her arm, eating the cookie while she read to him. Finally, she closed the book.
"You gotta go,"
he said, looking forlorn.
"The doc wants to keep you here for a few days, just to make sure you're well. But in no time at all, we will be off on our adventure."
"To California,"
he said. "To California."
Elsa pulled him into her arms and held him tightly, then kissed his forehead and whispered,
"Bye, baby boy."
Leaving him was always hard, but finally there was hope. Aunt would be coming home soon. Outside, she glanced down the street and saw people coming out of the school, a glum, quiet gathering. She saw Tony exchange a few words with Mr. Carrillo, then shake his hand. Elsa waited for Tony on the boardwalk. He moved slowly toward her, looking beaten.
"How's our boy?"
Tony asked.
"Doc says he can leave on Tuesday. Any news from the government man?" Elsa asked.
Tony gave her a look so steeped in despair it took her breath away.
"No good news," he said.
Elsa nodded. They started the long, solemn walk home. In 2 days, they were leaving this godforsaken land. And Elsa didn't say that lightly. God-forsaken. How else could one describe it? God had turned his back on the Great Plains. She'd spent the last few days packing for the trip. On this Palm Sunday, instead of going to church, Elsa had canned the jackrabbits Tony and Loretta shot yesterday. When that laborious chore was done, she'd moved on to the laundry. Now, at the end of the blue-skied day, Elsa knelt in front of her little aster plant, pouring a few precious cupfuls of water into the thirsty ground. This flower, which she'd covered and protected and watered and talked to for so long, stood alone, defiantly green against all this brown. She would have to leave it behind to die. She dug up the small, tender plant. Carrying it in a bowl made from her gloved hands, she crossed the yard. At the family's cemetery, the white picket fence lay in pieces. The headstones were half covered in dirt. 4 gray, store-bought headstones with Rose's and Elsa's baby's names inscribed on them. 3 girls and a boy. How long would these markers last in the wind? And when the Martinellis were gone, who would tend to their children, buried all alone in the middle of nowhere? Elsa knelt in the sand.
"Maria, Angelina, Juliana, Lorenzo, this is all I can leave with you. I will pray it rains this spring so it flowers."
She planted the flower in the powdery dirt in front of Lorenzo's half-buried headstone. The asters sagged immediately, slumped to one side. Elsa would not cry over this one little flower. She closed her eyes in prayer. Too soon, she wiped her eyes and got slowly to her feet. As she straightened, she saw a black shadow rising in the distance. The blackest thing she'd ever seen, it lifted into the dark blue early evening sky, spread enormous black wings outward. Static electricity tingled the back of her neck, lifted her hair. A black storm? Whatever it was moving this way, fast. She ran for the house, met Rose in the yard.
Madonna mia, Rose said.
They stared at the blackness billowing toward them. It had to be a mile high. Birds flew overhead, hundreds of them, flying at their greatest speed. Tony ran out of the barn and stood with them, watching. It was eerily silent, calm. There was no wind. A burning smell filled Elsa's nostrils. The air felt sticky. Static electricity arced in little bursts of blue fire through the air, dancing on bits of barbed wire and the windmill's metal blades. Birds fell from the sky. All at once, complete darkness. Dust clogged their eyes and noses. Elsa clamped a hand over her mouth and held on to her mother-in-law. The three of them made it to the house, stumbled up the stairs. Tony opened the door and shoved the women inside.
Mom!
Loretta screamed.
What's happening?
Elsa couldn't see her daughter. That was how dark it was. She couldn't see her own hands. Tony slammed the door shut behind them.
Rose, help me with the windows.
Loretta!
Elsa yelled.
Put on your gas mask. Get to the kitchen. Sit under the table. But...
Go! Elsa said to the daughter she couldn't see. Elsa and Rose felt their way from room to room, closing the windows and covering them and pressing newspapers and oilcloth in every crack and crevice. They kept their supplies, Vaseline, sponges, bandanas, in a basket in the kitchen. Elsa carried it through the inky dark and found a flashlight, clicked it on. Nothing, just a click.
Is it on?
Rose asked, coughing.
Who knows?
Elsa said.
We need to get under the table, drape it with wet sheets, Rose said.
Something hit the house hard, a terrible thwack. Window glass shattered in a series of loud cracks and clattered to the floor. The front door was ripped open. The swirling, biting black monster of a storm whooshed inside, hitting so hard Rose stumbled sideways. Tony raced over to shut the door again and threw the bolt shut. They found the buckets they kept filled with water in the kitchen and soaked some sheets to drape over the table and then dampened sponges and pressed them to their faces, breathing hard through them. Elsa heard Loretta breathing heavily through the gas mask. She crawled forward, found the kitchen table. Pushing chairs aside, she crawled underneath it.
I'm here, Loretta,
she said, reaching out. Elsa felt Loretta take her hand. They were sitting together, side by side, but couldn't see each other. Thank God Aunt wasn't here. Rose and Tony squeezed in under the table, past the draping of wet sheets. Elsa held her daughter close as boards were ripped away and windows broke. The walls shook so hard it seemed the house would shatter. Suddenly, it was freezing. Elsa woke to silence. In it, she heard the wheezing cant of Loretta's labored breathing through the gas mask. Then, a scuttling sound, a mouse probably, coming out of hiding, scurrying over the floor. She pulled down her crusty, dirt-filled bandana and peeled away the muddy sponge she'd been breathing through. Her first unprotected breath hurt all the way down her throat and into the pit of her gnawing, empty stomach. She opened her eyes. Grit scraped her eyeballs. Dirt blurred her vision, but she could see the dirty sheets draped around them and her family tucked in close to one another. Whatever it was over. She coughed and spat out a blob of blackish-gray dirt that was as thick and as long as a pencil nub.
Loretta? Rose? Tony? Is everyone okay?
Loretta opened her eyes.
Yeah.
The gas mask turned her voice raspy and monstrous. Tony slowly lowered his bandana. Rose crawled out from under the table and staggered to her feet. She took Elsa by the hand, led her into the sitting room. Bright morning sunlight shone through the broken window. Impossibly, they'd slept through the night and outlasted the storm. There was black dirt everywhere, a deep layer of it on the floor, gathered in dunes at every chair leg, falling down the walls like a mass of centipedes. The front door wouldn't open. They'd been buried in. Tony climbed out the broken window and dropped onto the porch. Elsa heard the scuffling thwack of the metal shovel on the porch boards as he dug sand away. Finally, the door opened. Elsa stepped outside.
Oh my God,
she whispered. The world had been reshaped and blanketed by the storm. Black dirt and dust as fine as talcum powder covered everything. There was nothing to see for miles except swelling dunes of inky sand. The chicken coop was completely buried. Only the very peak of it poked up. The water pump rose up like a relic from a lost civilization. They could have walked right up to the top of the barn on one side. Dead birds lay in heaps on the sand dunes, their wings still outstretched, as if they'd died mid-flight.
Madonna mia,
Rose said.
That's it,
Elsa said.
We are not waiting until tomorrow. We are going to get Aunt and leave right now, this instant, before this goddamned land kills my children.
She turned and strode back into the house. Every indrawn breath felt like swallowing fire. Her eyes burned, grit lodged in her eyes, her throat, her nose, in the creases in her skin. It kept falling out of her hair. Loretta stood by a broken window, her face blackened by dirt, looking dazed.
We're leaving for California. Now, go get the suitcases. I'm going to fill a tub with water for bathing in the yard.
Outside?
Loretta said.
No one will see you,
Elsa said grimly. For the next few hours, no one spoke. Elsa would have watered her aster, but the cemetery was gone. Markers and picket fence and all, gone. Tony shoveled the driveway so they could leave. They had strapped what they could to the truck. A few pots and pans, two lanterns, a broom and a washboard and a copper bathing tub. Inside the truck bed was their rolled-up camp mattress, a barrel full of food and towels and bedding, bundles of kindling and wood, and the black stove, strapped against the back of the cab. They packed as much as they could for their new life, but most of what they owned was still in the house and barn. The kitchen cabinets were nearly full, as were most of the closets. There was no way they could take it all. The furniture they would leave behind, like the pioneers who'd unloaded their covered wagons when the going got tough, leaving pianos and rocking chairs alongside their buried dead on the plains. When they were completely packed, Elsa walked back to the house, over the dunes and troughs of sand. Elsa looked around the house. They were leaving it full of furniture, with pictures still on the walls. Everything was covered in fine black dirt. The front door opened. Tony walked in, holding hands with Rose.
Loretta is in the truck. She's impatient to go,
Tony said.
I'll make one last pass through the house,
Elsa said. She walked through the powdery black dirt in the sitting room, over hills and across scrape marks. The kitchen window was gone. Through it, the beautiful blue sky looked like an oil painting hung on a black wall. Elsa walked into her bedroom and stood there one last time. Books lined the dresser and the nightstands, each one draped in black dirt. Just like when she'd left her parents' home, she could only take a few of her treasured novels with her. Once again, she was starting over. She quietly closed the bedroom door on this life and walked out of the house for the last time. Rose and Tony stood on the porch, holding hands.
I'm ready,
she said, stepping onto the first riser of the porch steps.
Elsinore,
Tony said. It was the first time he'd ever used her given name, and it surprised her. Elsa turned.
We aren't going with you,
Rose said. Elsa frowned.
I know we plan to leave later, but...
No,
Tony said.
That's not what we mean. We aren't going to California.
I don't understand. I said we needed to leave, and you agreed.
And you do need to go,
Tony said.
The government has offered to pay us not to grow anything. They have forgiven mortgage payments for a while, so we don't have to worry about losing any more of the land. For now, at least.
You said there was no good news after the meeting,
Elsa said, feeling a rush of panic.
You lied to me?
This is not good news,
he said softly.
Not when I know you must go for Aunt's sake.
They want us to plow differently,
Rose said.
Who understands it? But they need the farmers to work together. How can we not try to save our land?
Aunt can't stay, Elsa said.
We know that, and we can't go,
Tony said.
Go. Save my grandchildren.
His voice broke on that. Tony curled his hand around the back of her neck, pulled her gently toward him, touched his forehead to hers. This was a man of the old world, a man who shut up and moved on and never stopped working. He poured all of his passion and love into the land for his family. This touch was how he said, I love you. And goodbye.
Rosalba,
Tony said.
The penny.
Rose took off the thin, black-ribboned necklace that held a velvet pouch. Solemnly, she handed the pouch to Tony. He opened it, withdrew the American penny.
You are our hope now,
he said to Elsa, and then put the penny back in the pouch and pressed the necklace into the palm of her hand, forced her fingers to curl around it. He turned and walked back into the house, scuffling through the ankle-deep sand. Elsa felt as if she were breaking apart.
You know I can't do this alone, Rose. Please.
Rose laid a calloused hand on Elsa's cheek.
You are everything those children need, Elsa Martinelli. You always have been.
I'm not brave enough to do this.
Yes, you are.
But you'll need money. We took all the food.
We kept some for ourselves, and our land will provide.
Elsa couldn't speak. The last thing in the world she wanted was to drive across the country, over mountains, and across vast deserts, with too little money and hungry children and no one to help her. No. The thing she couldn't bear would be to watch her son struggle to breathe again. And there it was. The truth Rose had already come to.
Tony put money in the glove box, Rose said. The tank is full of gas. Write to us.
Elsa slipped the necklace over her head, then reached for Rose's hand, afraid for a moment that once she touched this woman she loved, she wouldn't be able to let go, that she'd be too weak to leave.
I can prove the penny's luck. It brought you to us,
Rose said. Elsa wet her dry, dry lips.
You are the daughter I always wanted,
Rose said.
Ti amo. And you are my mother,
Elsa said.
You saved me, you know.
Mothers and daughters, we save each other, see?
Elsa stared at Rose for as long as she could, memorizing everything about her. But at last, she had no choice. It was time to leave this place, this woman, this home. She left Rose standing on the porch and walked across the hillocks of black sand to the loaded-up truck, where Loretta sat in the front. Elsa got into the driver's seat and slammed the door shut and started the engine. It shuddered, coughed, started up. Elsa drove slowly down the driveway and turned toward town. The landscape was black and piled with sand. To the left, she saw an automobile half buried. 100 feet farther on, a man lay dead, his hand outstretched, his open mouth full of sand. "Don't look," she said to Loretta.
"Too late."
Lonesome Tree was shrouded in black dirt. Elsa pulled up in front of the makeshift hospital. It wasn't until she got out and went in.